Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Another city has been rocked by rioting after a deadly police shooting. We'll have details for you on the turmoil in Baltimore after a man in police custody died of a spinal injury. We'll also have news about a troubling case involving a Border Patrol agent who shot and killed a 15-year-old boy on the Mexican side of the international border. Then on our Capitol Report, hear about a Supreme Court case that is expected to decide whether or not gay marriage will become the law of the land. If you see smoke in the next few days in East County, listen up. We'll have information for you on live fire trainings being conducted in Jamul. The federal government has recommended lowering fluoride levels in drinking water. Find out why on today's show. We'll also have news about a jobs fair in East County and about a major clothing manufacturer that is taking steps to help clean up our oceans by making clothes out of plastic trash. The statistics are in, and Amber Alerts are working to save children's lives. Find out the next step to expand this successful program. We have an important health warning today about a spike in hospitalizations resulting from a dangerous new version of the synthetic drug known as Spice. Our newsmaker interview today is with Estela De Los Rios from CSA. She'll be talking about the alarming rise in human trafficking in our region and what you should know to protect your children from being abducted into the sex trade. On Destination East County, we'll have some exciting festivals and events coming up across our region, including the Coyote Music Festival, an outdoor concert at the Desert View Tower, a butterfly festival, a new murder mystery theater production, and much, much more. In honor of Women's History Month, we'll also tell you about an amazing woman from East County's past, and we'll update you on the latest efforts to put a woman on the $20 bill. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Another city has erupted in violent protests over alleged police brutality. Rioting broke out Monday in Baltimore, Maryland, after the funeral of Freddie Gray, an African-American who died after suffering spinal injuries while in a van in police custody. Rioters set fire to police cars and a pharmacy, sabotaged fire hoses, and hurled bricks at police officers. At least 15 police officers have been injured, 6 of them seriously, CNN reports. Looting has also been reported. A senior center built by a church has been torched, and 200 people were arrested. On Tuesday, President Obama condemned the rioters as criminals and thugs. Baltimore police posted a warning on its website stating that Crips, Bloods, and Black Guerrilla Family street gang members have entered into a partnership to, quote, take out police officers. The department asked media to disseminate this message nationwide. Patch.com reports that law enforcement agencies in California are taking the threat seriously. The National Guard was deployed in Maryland at the request of the state's governor, Larry Hogan, who called the move a last resort. Newly appointed Attorney General Loretta Lynch, on her first day in office, says she will send Justice Department officials to the city. The officers involved in Gray's injuries are suspended without pay while an investigation is in progress. The riots follow a string of fatal incidents involving white police officers and black suspects. Those include the deadly shooting of Michael Brown, an unarmed teenager in Ferguson who was stopped for merely walking in the street in Missouri. Some witnesses said Brown had his hands up to surrender after an altercation with the officer, though the officer contended that he shot in self-defense. Later in 2014, New York police fatally choked Eric Garner, who was accused of selling cigarettes illegally. Video showed Garner repeatedly gasping, "I can't breathe," before he died. And then in early April 2015, video showed a Charleston, South Carolina officer fatally shooting Walter Scott in the back as he was running away. The officer, Michael Slager, is charged with murder in that case. In Baltimore, meanwhile, the city has imposed a mandatory curfew, and police are urging parents to know where their teen children are and, quote, bring them home. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the network for social justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A federal court ruled on Friday that the United States Border Patrol cannot be sued in United States courts by the family of a teenager in Mexico shot by an American border agent. In 2010, 15-year-old Sergio Gureca was near a bridge between El Paso, Texas and Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, when he was fatally shot by a United States Border Patrol agent, shooting across the border. The agent claimed he was surrounded by youths crossing the border who threw rocks at him when he approached. However, a cell phone video posted on Univision appears to contradict the agent's story. Vicky Gambeca with the American Civil Liberties Union, New Mexico's Regional Center for Border Rights, called the court ruling disappointing, adding that it disregards the family's need for justice and seems to give Border Patrol agents free license to shoot across an international boundary and kill children. Christian Ramirez, Human Rights Director at Alliance San Diego and Director of the Southern Border Communities Coalition, says the Fifth Court's ruling denies the victim's family a day in court and condemns border communities to continue to be haunted by impunity and state violence. The family has not yet announced whether it will appeal the decision. In 2014, the Department of Homeland Security released an outside audit conducted by the Police Executive Research Forum, which reviewed the Border Patrol's use of force policies and practices. The auditors concluded that agents placed themselves in harm's way to justify using deadly force, such as standing in front of moving vehicles or in close proximity to rock throwers. When facing rock-throwing situations, the Police Executive Research Forum recommended agents be trained to de-escalate these encounters by taking cover, moving out of range, and/or using less lethal weapons. Agents should not place themselves into positions where they have no alternative but to use deadly force. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. The U.S. Supreme Court is hearing a landmark case this week, Obergefell v. Hodges, that is expected to decide whether same-sex couples should have a constitutional right to marriage in all 50 states. The High Court previously refused to block gay marriages from taking place in a number of states where that right is still being litigated in court. Some experts believe that in so doing, the justices signaled their intention to legalize gay marriage, but others say the court could reverse course with an opposite finding. If the courts find a constitutional right to same-sex marriage, you can expect wedding bells to be ringing nationwide soon. But if the justices find that the Constitution does not protect rights of same-sex couples to marry, the result could be, quote, a mess, unquote, says constitutional law professor Dale Carpenter at the University of Minnesota, The Washington Post reports. Rights could be denied in 22 states where bans on gay marriages were struck down by the lower federal courts. And this action would cause confusion and new battles over legislation and legal rights. The biggest question looming is what happens to couples who married in those states after the ban was lifted, if this is suddenly reimposed. Whether courts would invalidate those unions or not remains to be seen.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. CAL FIRE, in conjunction with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, will be conducting live firefighting training and habitat improvement in the Rancho Jamul area. This vegetation management project will also include the burning of non-native grasses. The training is scheduled to begin on Tuesday morning, April 27th, and last through Friday afternoon, April 30th, if weather permits. Several fire crews will be present while burning is conducted. Smoke may be visible for several miles throughout the county due to the location of the training.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health report. Americans are getting too much fluoride from multiple sources, including toothpaste, mouthwash, some juices and sodas, and water, the federal government has found. So, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is now recommending cutting in half the amount of fluoride that's added to drinking water to prevent tooth decay. Ironically, too much fluoride can actually hurt the teeth of young children. The federal government officially recognizes only one problem associated with too much fluoride. It's called fluorosis, which causes staining of the teeth. The stains can be white or, in severe cases, brown, causing pitting of teeth and sometimes requiring cosmetic procedures to repair the damage. Only children age 8 or younger are at risk of fluorosis. Now, this actually happened to my daughter, who had to get veneers on her front teeth to repair damage after she got brown spots on her front teeth. According to WebMD, fluorosis affects nearly one in every four Americans ages 6 to 49 now. It's most prevalent in those ages 12 to 15. The vast majority of cases are mild and less than 1% are severe, but researchers have also observed that since the mid-80s, the prevalence of fluorosis in children ages 10 to 15 has increased sharply. Although fluorosis is not a disease, its effects can be psychologically distressing and difficult to treat, and costly, I might add. But some scientists contend that excess fluoride may lower IQs, cause brain damage, and also increase the risk of other health conditions such as thyroid disorders and attention deficit disorder. Dr. Philippe Grandjean at Harvard School of Public Health says, due to the importance of having the best possible brains in the future, I think that would suggest that we be careful about the amounts of fluoride that we deliver to the population in drinking water, NPR reports. The Fluoride Action Network, an organization opposed to water fluoridation, is calling on the U.S. to stop fluoridation altogether, as some European countries have already done. Parents should closely monitor their children's teeth, and if you see even slight white spots appear, contact your dentist right away. Give children only a pea-sized amount of toothpaste and teach them to spit out after brushing, not swallow the toothpaste. Ingesting very high levels can also lead to fluoride toxicity with symptoms including nausea, vomiting, and abdominal pain. So just how did the idea of adding fluoride to drinking water get started? It began after health authorities noted that people in Colorado Springs, Colorado, had slightly discolored teeth from naturally occurring fluoride in their water, but they also had stronger teeth that were resistant to cavities. Now, naturally occurring doesn't mean something is safe. Just look at arsenic, for example. And the fluoride that's added to your water, well, it isn't naturally occurring. It's actually a byproduct of industry. The controversy boils down to who should be making decisions about whether or not children should be ingesting fluoride in their drinking water, parents or the government. Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy. Do you need help finding a job or a new career? Cuyamaca College will host a free workshop on job techniques and careers on Thursday, April 30th from noon to 1:30 p.m. This event is open to the community at large, as well as to students, faculty, and staff. The location is the Career Center, room A221 at Cuyamaca College's campus in the Rancho San Diego community of El Cajon. You can show up at the door or reserve space by calling the Career Services Department at 619-660-4436. This has been Miriam Raftery reporting for East County Magazine. Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report. Plastic poses a major hazard to our oceans and to marine life. There are nearly 270 million tons of plastic in the world's oceans. Each year, as many as 135,000 whales become entangled in plastic debris, according to the World Society for the Protection of Animals. Other animals, such as turtles, fish, and birds, can also become entangled or ingest the plastic, which enters the food chain and affects us all. But now Adidas, a global maker of athletic clothing and shoes, has announced it will be collecting plastic trash from the ocean and recycling it into wearable items for consumers. The company is partnering with Parley, which aims to collect 10,000 tons of plastic this year from coastlines around the world. The solution isn't perfect. Such garments can shed fibers during washing that ultimately wind up washed back out to sea. But Adidas's commitment to cleaning up the seas has another benefit, providing a platform to educate consumers around the world about the problems caused by ocean plastic and the need to use alternative materials wherever possible.
Amber alerts have been activated 240 times in California in the last 13 years, alerting people statewide about 298 missing children. The system has been extremely effective, since 290 of those children, all but 8 of them, have been found safely, better than a 90% success rate. 4 children are still missing, and 4 were killed, UT San Diego reported. The system has worked 8 times to recover kidnapped children right here in San Diego County. Besides those flashing freeway signs, Amber Alerts are now sent via email, cell phones, and posts on social media sites. Next up, there's a plan to develop a special signal for cell phones similar to a warning sound used to alert people to wildfires, floods, tornadoes, or other emergencies. Two of the dramatic success stories of the Amber Alert system had ties to San Diego's East County. The kidnapping of Lakeside teenager Hannah Anderson triggered an Amber Alert in five states, the largest ever, leading to her rescue from kidnapper James DiMaggio, who had murdered her mother and brother. The other high-profile case occurred last year on an on-ramp to Highway 52 in Santee, where a man who had killed his wife and kidnapped their four sons was spotted. He tried to leap to his death over the side, but police managed to stop him with a beanbag gun and save all four of the children. You can sign up to be on the Amber Alert list at amberalert.gov. The alert you share with your friends just may save a life. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Across the nation, health officials are warning about a sharp rise in hospitalizations among patients who took Spice, a synthetic marijuana-like drug. In the past year, poison control centers have received 1,900 calls from people experiencing adverse reactions after taking Spice, quadruple the number of calls from the prior year. USA Today reports some of the drugs are laced with PCP. Overdose can cause rapid heartbeat, kidney failure, agitation, and hallucinations. Treatment can require lengthy hospitalization and treatment with muscle relaxants. Teens and other users can find the products over-the-counter, sometimes sold in outlets such as gas stations as incense or herbal smoking blends. Although many varieties of synthetic drugs have been banned, manufacturers alter the chemical formulas to stay a step ahead of the authorities, sometimes creating severe reactions to these new compounds. There are over 50 varieties of synthetic marijuana identified thus far, with far more serious adverse reactions that typically occur from use of actual marijuana plants. This has been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice in Descanso. Broadcasting on the road today, we are at the offices of CSA San Diego right here in El Cajon, and my very special guest is Estela de los Rios, who is the Executive Director of CSA San Diego. Estela, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. It's a pleasure to be on once again to address some of the issues here in East County, but also locally in San Diego region.
Now, Estela, CSA works on many interesting projects, but we're here today to talk about the important issue of human trafficking. Can you give us some figures on how big a problem human trafficking is, first of all, at a global and a national level?
Absolutely. Human trafficking threatens the safety of families, women, and children, and $150 billion globally is being profited by human trafficking. There's 850,000 gangs globally, and cartels are making $100 million off of this business. It's a commodity. Sex slaves are a commodity in this nation.
Those are really shocking figures, and we know certainly that it's a serious problem locally as well. We've seen these sweeps with the district attorney, Bonnie DeMonis, working to crack down on it in conjunction with other law enforcement agencies. But do you have some figures on just how serious the problem is right here in San Diego County in our border region?
Yes, and that's a very good point. Because of the proximity of our border, this is one of the hot spots. We are the top three cities, according to FBI. Wow. Here locally, we have 100,000 minors that have been prostituted. The average age is 12 years old. And just recently, we had a sweep here in East County at our local school.
And that's right here in San Diego County, folks. This is really horrifying. Estela, I know you've said that your organization is working to build on the momentum that these sweeps have started and help just sweep this away from our region. What are you doing to outreach to the schools and get the word out to parents, teachers, and students about how to avoid having kids right here in East County and San Diego become victims of these human traffickers?
Because of the huge problem that we have to educate, protect, and motivate. And part of our projects are going out to the schools, having forums. We've had two already, one at Lincoln High School, which we had a good turnout of 300 parents and students. We had another one in Lemon Grove. Actually, more people assisted, 400 parents and students. And this is the target population that we have to educate on this crucial issues, because there's predators out there that are just going around the schools and picking up these girls. And next thing you know, they're missing and they're in the sex slave trade.
So they're actually recruiting them right out of the schools. This isn't necessarily out of gangs or at the shopping mall or the streets. It's literally happening in the halls of the schools here in East County and San Diego.
Yes, and you brought up a good point, because they are at the schools, but we just recently found out that one of the hot spots, too, is Parkway Plaza. Surprisingly, these predators are at the malls. They are at the trolley station. There are places where our students are after school, but most importantly, during school, there's a lot of activity also happening.
So how do these predators select the targets, and what do they do? Are they just snatching them out of the mall, or are they grooming them in some fashion to sort of condition them to go along with these predators?
The most vulnerable are the ones that they prey on. And most vulnerable meaning lonely girls. Most of them are girls, unfortunately female. The lonely girls, the depressed girls, girls that are looking for attention. And we've heard over and over by survivors and by parents of survivors, the most important thing to show your child is love, because these females are looking for love. And if they find someone that gives them that attention, for example, a predator that says, "Oh, honey, I love you. You are beautiful." Sometimes, you know, a female just wants to feel wanted, feel like they're beautiful, and feel that they have some validation. And unfortunately, these predators know this. They go to the malls. They buy them gifts. That's another red flag. They buy them gifts. If you see your children coming home with gifts that you didn't give them money for, a new cell phone, a new dress, new shoes, new bags, you know, expensive gifts, something that you normally would not buy your child, please investigate where she got that gift.
So how does this work? Once they entice them with these expensive gifts and say, "I love you, honey," or "you're beautiful," what's the next step that happens?
Well, many a times it doesn't even have to happen at a school. That it could be at a Starbucks. It could be at a party. They will put something in their drink. It could be a coffee. When they go to the bathroom, they come back and they're drowsy, or they drug them, and then they take them to a location. And many of these are homes. Many of these are houses where they just take them there, and unconsciously, they are kidnapped, and the rest is history.
Wow, that's terribly frightening. So what are the things that parents, students, and teachers should know? Other than what you've already mentioned, Estella, what are some of the warning signs that one can watch for?
One of the things that we do recommend for parents is be very vigilant. I know that cell phones is a very good communication tool. And a lot of parents don't watch or monitor what their child is doing on the phone or on the internet. You have to block the communication, and you have to monitor the communication. A lot of the red flags are when your child is spending a lot of time on the phone or on the computer or away from home at the mall, for example, just what we spoke about. And I just want to give another example. We had one cheerleader that was had practices, and for a long period of time, she had a boyfriend, and no one knew who he was. He was an older gentleman. She would tell her friends, you know, "He's going to pick me up," and everything was fine. Until one day, she didn't come back to school, and this boyfriend was not a boyfriend. He was just a predator who took her and dropped her off at a local house, and they have him here in East County. They have him here in the San Diego region, and to this day, you know, she has been a victim of trafficking, and sometimes they are rescued. We have a very good network of law enforcement. We have a very good network of partners that work diligently to combat this type of human trafficking.
What would you say if somebody listening to this is a victim of human trafficking themselves? They fall into the sex trade. How can they get help, and not be afraid that they might be prosecuted or get in trouble of some sort?
Fortunately, we have very many services that we offer. Again, collaboration with law enforcement, collaboration with shelters, collaboration with health services. We have a holistic approach to this issue. They can call 619-444-5700, and they can be assisted with any victim services that they like. We like to call them survivors, not victims, but survivors. Survivors, because it takes courage to speak up. And it's very dangerous, but we know that there's a lot of survivors out there. And if you're one of them, please give us a call, 619-444-5700. We work very closely with law enforcement. They will protect, first and foremost, you. And then we can get you some shelter, some services psychologically and physically as well.
Yeah, I understand that one thing that's really changed in recent years in California and San Diego is the way that these survivors or victims are treated. It used to be that they might be treated like criminals themselves, and now it's being understood that they were victims of these traffickers. Is that correct, Estella?
Yes, there's a lot of survivors that I work with, I collaborate with. Many of them have their own 501c3s now. I went with one to the United Nations. They are the voice. They are the advocates. They are preventing this from occurring to your child or to anyone, because that could be your child. It could be your sister. It could be your mother. It has no barriers. The youngest is 12 years old and the oldest is 64 that it has occurred to.
Wow. Are they also recruiting these young people online, over the internet?
Absolutely. We have the pornography that is on the internet. We have all these online sites, even Craigslist. Unfortunately, you know, you never know who is on that other side of the phone, the computer. And this is another thing, parents, you need to monitor anyone that's communicating with your child. You are the parent. You are the one that needs to know what is your child doing at all times and all hours.
Even Facebook. I mean, I hate to say it, but we've done investigations on a couple of missing teenager cases, and it was really easy to find. You put in the name, and there was a Facebook page that was pretty obviously a front for prostitution with pictures of this young girl posing basically naked in sexual poses and things, and really disturbing to see something like that going on. Are there things that people in the community can do if you suspect human trafficking going on? If you see a site like that, what can you do?
Please, again, I can't emphasize how much it's important. It doesn't matter what you see. Please call 619-444-5700. One child said at one of our forums, "I wish my parent had taken my phone away."
Wow. So for parents who are worried about monitoring their teenager's action, this really is very serious stuff, and there's good reason for it, certainly if you have reason to believe that your child is going to fall victim to one of these predators. Estella, as far as CSA goes, what are your next steps here?
We are diligently working to address human trafficking. We've been working on it for 15 years. We have local projects, like I mentioned, workshops, educate, motivate, and protect. And we also work on a national scale, advocating for the laws to protect survivors and to prosecute predators, to prosecute other predators, even the ones that are online. There's not enough laws to protect our human trafficking victims.
If someone from a school, a teacher, a principal out there, a parent, is listening to this broadcast and they want you to bring your program to their school, what does it take to make that happen?
We can make that happen. Please give us a call, 619-444-5700. We encourage you. Please, it's necessary to protect our children, our families, and our community.
Very good. And if people want to get more information on this, what is the website that they can go to find out more about CSA or any other resources you may suggest for information about human trafficking in the San Diego area?
www.c4sa.org. Please, I encourage you, always, always look out for any signs of human trafficking. Thank you.
Estella, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, to speak out on this extremely important issue of human trafficking right here in San Diego and East County.
Thank you, and I'm very proud that you are that voice for East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes a murder mystery dinner theater, two major musical festivals, a wine tasting event, a garden tour, a Cinco de Mayo celebration, and more.
Plus, we'll also have a preview of coming attractions, including Explorer Mission Trails, Ramona's Old West Days, Wild in the Country at a Wildlife Rescue Facility, a Fiddler's Competition, and much, much more.
You're invited to a howling good time at the Coyote Music Festival at Cuyamaca College on Sunday, May 2nd from 12 to 4 p.m. Six homegrown bands playing an eclectic mix of folk, jazz, pop, and rock at the Coyote Music Festival noon to 4 p.m. Saturday, May 2nd. Now in its seventh year, the entirely student-run festival will provide the community a free afternoon of live music by local talent, where picnic blankets and lawn chairs are the best seats in the house. For students enrolled in a music industry studies, the festival represents a term project, the culmination of a semester's work, learning every aspect of putting on a big music event, preparing for careers in the music industry. Along with the music, vendors selling jewelry, kettle corn, and more will be a part of the festival. For details, see cuyamaca.edu.
Cafe Murder will be presented by the Circle Players of East County, a new community theater group, May 1st through May 3rd at Richardson Hall in El Cajon at 1531 Farragut Circle. This fun murder mystery comedy is for all ages. The leading character, who is allergic to water, is celebrating her birthday at a restaurant with her sisters. The birthday girl disappears and is presumed murdered. Everyone has a motive and everyone is a suspect. Was it one of Rosemary's sisters, or the self-taught detective, or the passionate French chef, or the sarcastic waiter? You will find lots of laughs while trying to figure it out. The only witnesses in the restaurant are the audience members, who get involved by casting their vote. The Circle Players is part of the First Presbyterian Church of El Cajon's Neighbor to Neighbor program, established as a drama theater outreach to the East County. Reservations are required. For information on showtimes or tickets, visit firstpress-elcajon.org.
The 9th Annual Campo Lake Morena Roundup is set for Saturday, May 2nd at the Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility at 799 Forest Gate Road in Campo. Gates open at 7 a.m. with opening ceremonies at 9 a.m. and presentation of this year's Grand Marshal at 10 a.m. Guests are welcome to wear period costumes. You can enjoy a day in the country and witness how the cowboys ride, rope and brand cattle in the ranch branding competition, watch or try your luck in the Gene Martinez Memorial Horseshoe Tournament, an all-day gymkhana for kids and adults will also take place. That's games on horseback. There will also be a Miss Roundup pageant, relay races, three-legged races, tug-of-war, roping in a hula hoop contest. Gunfight skits will be hosted by the Hole in the Wall gang with special guests, the Gaskells, who will reenact the famous Campo gunfight of 1875. There is also a mutton busting competition for kids under 50 pounds, as well as a stick horse race. The Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility is located in Campo on the old Camp Lockett Army Base. For more information, you can visit campoleaf.org/roundup.
The 18th Annual Sage and Songbirds Garden Tour on May 1st through 3rd will feature 5 private home gardens plus a hummingbird haven and a raptor rehabilitation facility for close-up viewing of wildlife. The tour includes water-wise plants such as succulents and native plants from Australia, the Mediterranean, and California, as well as garden-related vendors, plant sales, music, live butterfly releases, plus cruising critters, reptiles, and insects. For tickets and a schedule, visit chirp.org.
The second annual Incopah Classic Desert Concert will be held on May 2nd. This outdoor high desert concert will be held at the Desert View Tower, a state historical monument perched on a rocky hillside overlooking the Anza Borrego Desert. The Incopah offers music lovers and naturalists alike a chance to experience an overnight event featuring multiple bands within our southwest region. For tickets and details, visit incopah2.brownpaperticket.com.
The third annual Mardi Gras Tardi Gras Ball will be presented by the Alpine Education Foundation on Saturday, May 2nd from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. at the Alpine Community Center. All proceeds benefit the Alpine Education Foundation to help Alpine schools and students. The event will feature a Cajun-inspired buffet dinner, no-host bar, and live music by Theo and the Zydeco Patrol, plus a live auction, costume parade, and crowning of the Mardi Tardi Ball King and Queen at the Alpine Education Association's event. For tickets, visit acf4kids.net.
The San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra will present 2 for the show on Sunday, May 3rd at 3 p.m. at College Avenue Baptist Church at 4747 College Avenue, San Diego. The concert features 2 major choral works, Giacchino Rossini's Stabat Mater and John Reuter's Fill the Spirit. For tickets, visit sandiegofestivalchorus.org.
The 25th annual Vintage Alpine will be held on Sunday, May 3rd from 1 until 4 p.m. at Summers Pass Farms in Flynn Springs. Vintage Alpine will feature tasting of 40 wines plus foods from fine restaurants across our region. This event attracts over 500 people annually, with all proceeds used to benefit services and programs for the children of San Diego. Vintage Alpine, a wine experience in the country, is presented by the Kiwanis Club of Alpine Foundation. This event is limited to persons 21 years of age and up. Tickets can be reserved at vintagealpine.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. Arriba! Casa de Pico Restaurant celebrates Cinco de Mayo on Saturday and Sunday, May 4th and 5th, with performances throughout the day at Ballet Forcloyo, Mariachis and Troubadours, as well as food and drink specials. For details, visit casadepico.com.
Oh, Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine invites you to Wild in the Country, Passport to the Jungle on Saturday, May 9th from 3 until 7 p.m. The Exotic Animal Rescue Facility in Alpine will serve up dinner, live entertainment, live and silent auctions, plus prize drawings to benefit the nonprofit's efforts to make a real difference in the lives of more than 50 rescued animals that call the sanctuary home. For tickets and details, visit lionstigersandbears.org.
The Water Conservation Garden at Queen Mecca College in Rancho San Diego hosts its annual Butterfly Festival on Saturday, May 9th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Activities include tours of a butterfly pavilion and butterfly discovery lab, workshops, a pollinator party with Miss Smarty Pants, live music, food, crafts, and jewelry by local artisans. Children are encouraged to dress as a caterpillar or their favorite winged pollinator for the pollinator party at 11:30 a.m. For more information, visit thegarden.org/butterfly.
Ramona Western Days, a living history, encampments, and gunfighter skits competition will be held Saturday, May 9th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sunday, May 10th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Ramona Rodeo Grounds. Hosted by Ramona Old West Days and Guns of the Round Table, the encampments will feature people representing the conditions people endured in the 1800s, including mountain men, pioneers, Civil War soldiers, and cowboys. New this year is a gunfighter skit competition on Saturday and Sunday, showcasing comedies, dramas, melodramas, history, and more. For details, contact Ramona Old West Days at gmail.com.
Grant James Vineyard in Ramona will be celebrating Mother's Day on May 9th and 10th with flowers and chocolates for every mom. For more information, visit vineyardgrantjames.com.
America on Main Street, a fun-filled family event, is being held this year on Saturday, May 16th in the downtown El Cajon area, beginning at 8 a.m. and lasting until 8 p.m. Admission is free, as are miniature pony rides, a kid-friendly petting zoo, large Ferris wheel, and varieties of games and crafts for the children. There will also be four different stages featuring live entertainment and music for your listening pleasure. For details, visit AmericaOnMainStreets.org.
Explore Mission Trails Day will be held Saturday, May 16th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Mission Trails Regional Park. This free event features free guided nature walks, talks, and programs throughout the park, including live animals and special kids programs from pony rides to a climbing wall, as well as a program in the amphitheater featuring coyotes. There will also be a bicycle demonstration and a program in the amphitheater. For details, see mtrp.org.
The Santee Street Fair and Craft Beer Festival, organized by Santee's Chamber of Commerce, will be held on Saturday, May 23rd from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. This large festival features local breweries from around San Diego County, live music and entertainment, a crafter row and artist alley, over 300 food and vendor booths, carnival rides and games for the family, in celebration of Memorial Day weekend. There will also be a tribute to veterans. Admission is free, though there is a fee for beer tasting. The location is at the junction of Riverview Parkway and Town Center Parkway. For details, visit SanteeStreetFair.com.
Julian hosts its Arts and Crafts Fair on Saturday, May 23rd from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., organized by the Julian Fireplugs. The event benefits the Julian Cuyamaca Fire Protection District and will be held at 2033 Main Street in Julian.
The California State Old Time Fiddlers Association District 7 presents the Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest on Saturday, May 30th at Julian's Town Hall in the historic gold mining town of Julian. Building on the decades-long history of the former Julian Banjo and Fiddle Contest, the Julian Fiddle and Pickin' Contest provides fiddlers, guitarists, mandolin players, and banjo players an opportunity to demonstrate their talents in a festive and friendly atmosphere. For details, visit sandiegofiddler.org. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in our calendar and in our festival and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar or would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is Leon Thompson with an update on WomenOn20s.org. Efforts to have a woman's image replace Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill. The group held a national vote for the public to choose among 15 candidates. Now the field has been narrowed to four. Three were chosen by popular vote: Rosa Parks, Eleanor Roosevelt, and Harriet Tubman. The fourth, Wilma Mankiller, was added by popular demand to include a Native American option to replace Jackson, a former general and president. President Jackson ordered the forced relocation of Cherokee Indians off their land, causing deaths of 4,000 in what became known as the Cherokee Trail of Tears. Mankiller, fittingly, was a Cherokee chief, noted for her accomplishments to help the Cherokee people. Here are highlights of all four finalists. Wilma Mankiller was the first woman elected a Native American nation leader in modern times. Her great-grandfather survived the Cherokee Trail of Tears. Born in 1945 as one of 11 children, she was raised on an Oklahoma reservation in a home without electricity, indoor plumbing, or phones. After her family moved to San Francisco, she became involved in the Indian rights movement and became coordinator of Indian programs for Oakland Public Schools. After divorce, she took her daughters back to Oklahoma and married a full-blooded Cherokee. She founded the Community Development Department for the Cherokee Nation, making dramatic improvements in housing and the community water system. She initially was elected as deputy chief, but when the chief left office to head up the United States Bureau of Indian Affairs, Mankiller became chief of the Cherokee Nation. She was later reelected twice, earning 83% of the vote, the second time in 1991. In her three terms, she tripled her tribe's enrollment, doubled employment, and built new housing, health centers, and children's programs. Infant mortality fell, and educational accomplishments rose. In 1990, she signed a historic self-determination agreement in which the Bureau of Indian Affairs surrendered direct control to the tribe over millions of dollars in federal funding. Her leadership made her a national role model. She remained a strong voice worldwide for social justice, Native people, and women after she left office in 1995. In 1993, she was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame, and in 1998, she received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest honor bestowed upon civilians in the United States. In her autobiography, Man Killer, A Chief and Her People, she wrote that she wanted to be remembered for emphasizing that Cherokee values can help solve contemporary problems. Rosa Parks, a seamstress, became known as the mother of the freedom movement after she refused to give up her seat and moved to the back of the bus for a white passenger in Montgomery, Alabama in 1955. Her act of civil disobedience and the resulting Montgomery bus boycott helped spark the success of the civil rights movement. Parks collaborated with civil rights leaders, including Martin Luther King Jr., as an organizer of civil rights actions. Raised with grandparents who were former slaves, as a child, she had witnessed Ku Klux Klan activities and attended a segregated school. She later became head of a local NAACP chapter aiming to end discrimination. For her own defiance in refusing to give up her bus seat to a white man, she was arrested and found guilty. But the events she set in motion led to the United States Supreme Court declaring Alabama's bus segregation law unconstitutional a year later. Parks and her husband lost their jobs due to their arrest and the court battles. They moved to Detroit, where she worked for Congressman John Conyers for many years. In 2013, President Barack Obama unveiled a statue honoring Parks in the U.S. Capitol, stating, "In a single moment, with the simplest of gestures, she helped change America and change the world." Eleanor Roosevelt was First Lady during her husband Franklin Delano Roosevelt's presidency, working to address the needs of women and minorities through a newspaper column and radio broadcasts. She was the first president's wife to take an active role. Later, she became a delegate to the United Nations, where she championed human rights. President Harry Truman dubbed her the First Lady of the World. Born into wealth, she suffered the tragic loss of her brother and both parents by age 10 when she was shipped off to boarding school in England and was deeply influenced by its feminist headmistress. After marrying Roosevelt, she soon found herself raising six children and serving as wife of the Assistant Secretary of the Navy during World War I, speaking at patriotic rallies and working with the Red Cross, also visiting wounded soldiers and working to improve conditions for the mentally ill. She supported her husband after he contracted polio, often campaigning on his behalf during the Depression and later World War II. She fought for equal pay legislation, child labor limits, civil rights, and women's rights. When Daughters of the American Revolution refused to allow African-American singer Miriam Anderson to perform in their Constitution Hall, the First Lady resigned her membership. After her husband's death as the U.S. delegate to the United Nations, she successfully fought for passage of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, helping people around the world. Harriet Tubman has been called the Moses of her time. An escaped slave born in the 1820s, she became a leading abolitionist before the Civil War, risking her freedom to return to the South 19 times to rescue slaves via the Underground Railroad, a network of secret safe houses on their journey to freedom in the North. Later, she served as a scout and spy for the Union Army. In her childhood, she saw her father freed and many of her brothers and sisters sold off. At 13, she refused to help restrain an escaped slave who had been captured and suffered a blow to the head that left her with seizures the rest of her life. She fled in 1848 and soon came back to rescue her own family and others, never losing a single passenger on the road to freedom. Also a gifted healer, she helped nurse those who were wounded. After the war, she advocated for freed slaves to receive an education and own property, also joining the fight for women's equality and the right to vote. called General Tubman by her admirers, she was laid to rest with full military honors as one of the first African-American women to serve in the military. You can cast your vote at womenon20s.org. The winning choice will be sent to President Barack Obama with a request that he instruct his Treasury Secretary to make the change in honor of the upcoming 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment that gave women the right to vote. Congressional approval is not required to change the faces on U.S. currency. WomenOn20s.org considered dozens of candidates before narrowing the field to 15, and now 4. No living women were eligible, since United States laws require that only people who have been dead at least 2 years may be honored with their images on currency. Two women have been honored on coins: suffrage leader Susan B. Anthony and Sacagawea, a Native American guide who led explorations by Lewis and Clark through the American West. With the slogan, "A woman's place is on the money," WomenOn20s.org hopes to convince the president that the time is right to recognize the accomplishments of a woman on the $20 bill.
California may soon become the first state in the nation to set minimum energy standards for home digital devices like computers, monitors, modems, and video game consoles. These machines use a lot of electricity, even when they're off, and we're using them more than 5 times as often as we did in 2001. The California Energy Commission is debating new rules for digital energy efficiency at a public workshop on Wednesday in Sacramento. Mark Cooper with the Consumer Federation of America applauds California's leadership on this issue.
Somebody has to step up and say, we need to do this. When California acts, it tends to get the industry's attention and to force the industry to think hard. And once they meet the standard in California, they end up selling more efficient devices every place.
Last fall, the governor vetoed an industry-supported bill that would have made rules like these non-binding. The Consumer Electronics Association, a trade group, says the standards would be too costly and are unnecessary, citing the success of voluntary initiatives like the EPA's Energy Star program. The state says the standards would drive up costs somewhat. For example, consumers could pay about $5 more for a computer monitor, but they'd save $26 on their power bill over the life of the device. Cooper says manufacturers are able to make the changes.
You got the technology, they know how to do it, and there's this clear market failure, and so the standard raises the level of all the devices.
Those who can't be at the workshop can watch it online at the California Energy Commission's website. The deadline to submit written comments is 4 p.m. tomorrow. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting the Sounds of History on the East County Magazine show. April is Women's History Month. It's an appropriate time to share a story about a remarkable woman from East County's past. Helen Stoddard, a former resident of La Mesa, Lemon Grove, and Ramona, was a prominent leader in the fight to win women the right to vote, as well as in the temperance movement. She even earned a place in history at the national political level. Born in 1850 in Wisconsin, Stoddard earned a teaching degree at Genesee Wesleyan Seminary in New York, graduating as valedictorian in 1873. She married Shepherd Stoddard and had 2 sons, one of whom died in infancy. They lived briefly in Nebraska, but soon her husband's health was failing, so the family moved to Florida. And after he died in 1875, when Helen Stoddard was just 25 years old, she and her surviving young son moved to Texas to be near her parents. There, she became president of the Texas State Chapter of the Women's Christian Temperance Union, concerned over the negative impacts of alcoholism on women and their families. She also served on the faculty of Fort Worth University and helped establish a women's industrial arts college that today is known as Texas Women's University, where 2 buildings were named after her. She became an activist, lobbying successfully for a pure food law and laws against cocaine, gambling, child labor, raising the age of protection for girls from 12 to 15 in Texas, and more. She spent 3 months in Mexico as an organizer and twice served as a delegate to world conventions of the Women's Christian Temperance Union. She also wrote an article on the Texas suffrage movement for Susan B. Anthony's book, History of Woman Suffrage. In 1910, Helen Stoddard and her son moved to La Mesa, where she was soon elected president of the La Mesa Women's Club, which incidentally was founded in 1902 and is the city's oldest active service club today. She also headed up the local chapter of the Women's Christian Temperance Society, forerunner of the Prohibition movement. Local women embarked on barnstorming tours across the county to win support from men for women to gain the right to vote in California. La Mesa's newspaper and other local papers editorialized in favor of granting this right, since progressives in the region recognized that women would be key allies in local political issues and supporting social reforms related to child labor, public health, and regulating alcohol and vice. La Mesa Scout editorialized that the right of women to vote is as absolute as that of a man. In October 1911, California's legislature amended the state constitution, granting women the right to vote. Days later, Helen Stoddard loaded up motor cars with about 40 members of the La Mesa Women's Club and headed to the Registrar of Voters office in downtown San Diego, registering them all to vote. In La Mesa, then known as La Mesa Springs, a battle was brewing over incorporation to become a city. Supporters wanted the city to control its own water supply and support public education, among other goals. But there was strong opposition, mainly from ranchers who feared that their taxes would go up. Early efforts at incorporation faltered until the women got involved and won the right to vote. A meeting at the La Mesa Opera House on December 1, 1911 ended in disorder without a vote on whether to incorporate after vocal opponents showed up. Supporters brought their case to the supervisors, and among the speakers arguing to the supervisors was suffrage leader Helen Stoddard. The district attorney reviewed the petition but rejected it at first for not meeting requirements to publish notices 3 times over 2 weeks. So the supporters circulated a new petition and adjusted boundaries to remove some of their key opponents. In February 1912, a new meeting was convened at the city's Opera House, a building that today is the Por Favor restaurant in downtown La Mesa. Citizens nominated candidates for public office in case the incorporation petition passed, and Helen Stoddard was nominated to serve, but she declined. Turned out she had higher ambitions, and we'll tell you about that in a minute. On February 7, 1912, a special election was held and the incorporation measure passed with help from La Mesa's newly registered women. Soon after, Stoddard declared her intention to run for Congress on the Prohibition Party ticket. She was the first woman in California to seek national office. Her campaign targeted women with the slogan, "A vote for Helen Stoddard is a vote for the home." She didn't win, but she did draw over 1,300 votes out of over 20,000 cast for 5 candidates in the race. A year later, she and her son Robert and his wife moved to Lemon Grove, where they spent the next 10 years, and in 1923, they moved to Ramona, where her son raised turkeys and chickens, while his mother continued her work in the temperance movement from their home overlooking the Ramona High School. In 1920, Helen Stoddard was elected president of the California State Chapter of the Women's Christian Temperance Union, and she served as a California delegate to the Congress Against Alcoholism in Washington, D.C. After her son's death in 1936 in Ramona, Stoddard and her daughter-in-law moved to Texas. Helen Stoddard died there in January 1941 at age 90, and her body was returned to San Diego for burial next to her son at Greenwood Memorial Park. She had lived through the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, and the dawn of World War II. Born in the pioneer era, in her lifetime she advanced education of women and saw women win the right to vote, helped lead the successful fight for La Mesa to become a city, ran for national political office, fought for the passage of the Prohibition Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, but also lived to see that repealed. Throughout her life, she was a tireless fighter for the rights of women and girls, touching the lives of people across our nation to this day. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.